Hello, everyone, and welcome to season three of Movie Rob Minute. I want to once again thank all of my guests and listeners for helping make seasons one and two such a success. This season, we'll be yippee-ki-yaying our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action thriller Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. For anyone out there who's a little unfamiliar with what an MXM podcast is, it was originally created by Alex Robinson and Pete the Retailer, back in, I think it was 2012, where they began the Star Wars Minute, which is now in its eighth or even ninth season. Not even sure. If it wasn't for the hard work that they've been doing for almost a decade, most of us would never be doing this. There are, as of today, as of the day of recording, there are 216 MXM podcasts out there, and the number keeps growing. So I want to give a quick shout out once again to all the MXMers who came before me and who have helped to inspire me to do this very crazy idea. Through the Facebook forum that I'm active on, I've got a lot of new friends, and they've been all very helpful in so many aspects of creating this kind of show and helping things move along and move forward. So I want to thank everyone for that. On a personal note, I also want to thank Jim O'Kane. He's, I guess, known as the godfather of the MXMs, and he's done, as of now, five different group projects, and one of those group projects was actually Die Hard. So I actually got his blessing in order to be able to do this quote-unquote reboot, where I'll hopefully give a completely different take on the movie and on the breakdown of how everything happens in it. So hopefully anyone who was on that or who listened to it will find new stuff here and won't think that I'm just redoing everything that was already done before, which is why this is considered a reboot. On a personal note, I want to especially thank Jay Clute of the Deep Blue Sea podcast and the upcoming Con Air podcast for getting me to finally start doing my own show a year and a half ago. Without Jay, I never would have gotten to season three, and this never would have reached the point where it did. This season, we will have almost 27 different weeks of shows delivered to you every weekday from now until New Year's Day. So sit back and enjoy all of the 132 episodes as my weekly guests and I will begin to dissect this amazing thriller, which has spawned so many other thrillers over the years in minute detail, 1 minute at a time. I'm going to be doing things somewhat similar to what I did last season, but also I'm going to be changing things around a little bit. So I hope that the listeners will enjoy as my guests and I take a very deep dive into this movie over the next 6.5 months. So you can look out for some new features that we're going to be doing. We're going to be along with some old ones or along with some ones that we did last season. So we will have a tweaked version of Off the Beaten Track on 2 days this week, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Mondays, we will be having Die Hard on a Monday. On Wednesdays, we will have Hump Day Hans. And on Fridays, we are going to have a weekend surprise. So, I mean, after a few weeks, it no longer will be a surprise, but it's for as long as possible, it'll be a surprise for the guests. My guest this week is none other than the aforementioned host of both the Deep Blue Sea podcast and the upcoming Con Air podcast, Jay Clewitt. Welcome, Jay, to the inaugural episode and the inaugural week of season three.
Thank you, Rob. Like Beetlejuice, you say my name three times and I appear. Hello.
Hello, hello.
pleasure to be here to start off another film with you.
Yeah. I'm glad to have you. You know, I mean, we did talk yesterday, but that was to finish off Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And, you know, people get 6 days of you. You know, they know they will just get five days of Jay. You get 6 days of Jay. I think they are. I definitely think they are. But we'll have to wait and see.
We shall see.
We shall see. That's the way this all goes. So minute one of Die Hard begins with the 20th Century Fox logo and ends with McClane responding with a question. But before we get into the minute itself, let's talk a little bit about Die Hard. Okay.
Okay, that's what I'm here for.
That's right. So, Jay, do you know when Die Hard was originally released?
I know it was 88, but beyond that, I don't know. It was a bit of a difference in countries, as usual with most films.
That's true. That's very true. There are other reasons why you didn't see it when it came out, but we won't go
Yes,
into
I was
that.
one.
No, you weren't one yet. Okay, so the movie was originally released on July 15th, 1988.
I was almost one.
You were almost one. That's right. Another 3 weeks, 4 weeks, something like that. Yeah, 3 weeks. The budget of this movie was $28 million, and do you know how much it made?
Not a clue.
So it grossed over 140 million theatrically worldwide. It is largely considered by many people, including myself, as one of the greatest action films ever made. The film actually spawned four sequels, which maybe at some point we will get to minute by minute over the next few seasons, years, whatever it is. We'll have to see. It has also spawned video games, comic books, and lots of other movies since it created a genre. The genre that it basically created was the one man against the odds, against many. I don't know how you want to really
Against the world.
make it against the world. So Die Hard also came out. I remember it came out on the, well, actually, let's start with that. Jay, when did you first see Die Hard? Do you remember?
I do not remember a time when Die Hard didn't exist. I mean, it has existed my whole life, almost. My whole life I can remember. But no, I have no idea when I first saw it. I don't remember a time when I hadn't seen it. I know that I saw Die Hard with a Vengeance first. That was amongst my first ever favorite films. So I would have seen that on TV with my dad maybe. But then I don't. There was no real effort to go back and like, here is Die Hard. Bow down before it. It's always been there. It's always been like this perfect film. And every time I watch it gets better somehow. It finds more and more ways to be perfect.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. I mean, it's been 34 years since it came out, and it's still so much fun to watch as many times as possible. I mean, I
It actually came
personally.
out in 89 in the UK.
Oh,
It
really?
came out. It came out February 89 in the
Wow.
UK. So
Okay.
like the whole Christmas came and went. It came
So
out because,
you were a month, you were a year and a half when it came out in England. So you actually had the opportunity to see it when you were older than one.
my family are not, have were never big cinema goers. I have broken the mold from that one. So the first
No.
one I saw was it like 94. So it was like The Lion King and Nightmare Before Christmas. So
Oh, no, I
no,
think
no
you're talking about
chance of
with
seeing
Die
it
Hard
now.
with the Vengeance because that came out only in 95. So,
96, I want to say.
no, came out in 95. Well, in America, it came out in 95.
Okay.
When it came out in England, I couldn't tell
Who could say?
you.
There's
That I
no way of
couldn't tell.
finding
There probably is, but it's not worth checking. So basically, I remember when Die Hard came out, I didn't see it in the theater. I was 14 at the time. For some reason, I missed it that summer when it came out. It's actually interesting when I looked at the box office of that week of when it came out to see what other movies came out and what was considered number one. So number one, actually, let's start with what other movies came out the same day. Any clue?
No, not at all. This is not a game I'm good at. Is when films got released and how much they made, especially in a different country.
Okay, that's true. There is fairness in that. Okay, so on the same day, the Clint Eastwood movie The Deadpool came out.
I have seen that.
Yeah, they had a Bambi re-release
I have
from
seen that.
Disney. Die Hard, A Fish Called Wanda came out.
Yeah.
And A Killing Affair. I don't know what that movie is.
No, same. But the rest of that top five is pretty solid. Fish Called Wanda, one of my favorite films. Love that film.
So the week that they came out, though, so the top film that week was Coming to America, which was in its third week, and it made $10 million that week. The
Okay.
Deadpool was actually number two, where it made 9 million. Then we had Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which was in its fourth week, which made $8.5 million, followed by Bambi, which made $7 million. And then rounding up the top five was Big, which was in its seventh week. Okay. Now, if you want to try and find Die Hard on this list, the first week, you have to go all the way down to number 16.
Well, it had a pretty limited open.
It had limited open. It was only on 21 theaters, but still, you know, this was supposed to be the big budget weekend for it, you know, even though it was, again, only 21 theaters. So rounding out to reach 16, we'll go. So six was Bull Durham, Short Circuit 2, License to Drive, Arthur 2 on the Rocks, Crocodile Dundee 2, The Great Outdoors, Red Heat, Big Business, Phantasm 2, Willow, and then we get Die Hard and A Fish Called One at 16 and 17 that week.
Now, if I was one of the people who'd made Crocodile Dundee 2, I would never stop bragging that it beat Die Hard on its opening weekend.
That's a good reason. Good point. Definitely agree with you on that. So let's quickly jump to the following week. The following week where Die Hard expanded to almost 1,300 theaters, it made it to number three that week. Number one was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, followed by Coming to America, Die Hard, The Deadpool, and then there was the release of Midnight Run, which is such a fun movie.
That's an all-timer. Yeah.
All right. Now, going to the following week, because I'm trying to find a week where Die Hard actually made it to top film. And in the next week, it didn't either. Number one film was Cocktail. I don't know why. Okay.
Cocktail has its fans. It's got like a 5% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think. But
something like that, yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, it's Cruise, isn't it? So Cocktail is a fun watch, but not a sit down and criticize it minute by minute, because that won't.
Definitely not. I'm not going to. I don't know enough about mixing drinks to do that. That's for sure. So that week, the week of the 29th to the 31st of July, you have Cocktail, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Coming to America, and Die Hard, followed by Midnight Run. Okay, so then we will get Jay's birthday weekend, August 5th through the 7th.
Yeah.
Once again, Cocktail number one, Who Framed Roger Rabbit 2, Die Hard 3, Coming to America 4, and A Fish Called Wanda 5. So it's not looking good. I mean, people didn't apparently like Die Hard that much when it came out, or at least they liked Cocktail more. You know, and then the following week, you have Young Guns came out, which that was number one, followed by Cocktail, Die Hard, Fish Called Wanda, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I mean, I'm just amazed at the fact that, you know, as much as we all love Die Hard, it just didn't get enough love. Then even the following week, we're not going to go through the entire year, don't worry. But even the following week, you have A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, followed by Young Guns, and then Die Hard. I mean, it's nice to see that Die Hard still stayed, you know, high up.
It had longevity. Like, when does it drop out of the top five?
It was 16.
It's not until October. It's out of the top. Like, it gets up to number two in September.
Yeah.
Like, that's really impressive. I mean,
yeah. Obviously, it lasted 16 weeks. It lasted 16 weeks in the theater. And the lowest it ranked was its first week when it ranked 16. After that, it ranked 13. That was the lowest besides the 16. And that was for two weeks in a row at the end of October.
That's good word of mouth. That's really good word of mouth. I mean, obviously, times were different back then. There were fewer films. You didn't, like, these days, films get a week, and then there's another huge tempo to steamroll out of the way.
Right.
But even still, like, 16 weeks in the theaters.
Right.
And the highest, making it to number one.
That's right. The highest it made was number two, was the weekend of September 16th to the 18th, where Fish Called Wanda was number one.
it makes me laugh that Fish Called Wanda like perpetually beat Die Hard every week.
Oh no, well, not every week, but that particular week, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it was by, I think, $10,000 that week.
Yeah.
Because Fish Called Wanda made $2.555 million and Die Hard made $2.544 million. So again, we're talking, it's pretty close. And Die Hard was in more screens. Die Hard had 160 more screens. So
yeah, It was competing with Nightmare on Elm Street 4, as you mentioned, which, yeah, of course, directed by Rennie Harlan.
There you go.
Who would go on
to make who maybe we'll talk about in a year or two from now. Who knows?
Maybe. Maybe.
Possibly. Possibly.
Definitely.
So Die Hard, then, you know, it lasted 16 weeks in the theater, which is great. I remember when it came out on video. It must have been probably in March or April the following year. And I remember wanting to see it. And a really good friend of mine also wanted to see it. But his and we were going to watch it at his house. So we went to the video store, we rented it, and the problem was is that his parents didn't allow him to watch R-rated movies. So we were sitting in their living room and watching the movie, and every time that his parents would walk by, we'd have to, you know, quickly turn it off. As if, you know, we were doing something wrong. I mean, it's funny thinking about it now, you know, thinking back, you know, 30 plus years when I did this, you know, it's just completely absurd that that's what we did. You know, I don't know why we just didn't say, okay, let's go and watch it at my house, because my parents
wouldn't. That would make more sense, yeah.
That would have made more sense. I can't give an explanation as to why.
The folly of youth.
Yes, completely. And I loved it, even watching it in short segments, not as short as the segments that we're watching, that we've watched it for today, but still. And then I remember that it debuted in August on HBO, and I was on a trip with a youth group to the West Coast. And I remember that, you know, we would stay in motels, and most motels at the time would have free HBO. And just about every night, me and a group of my friends would sit and watch Die Hard because it was always on, and it was just a lot of fun.
It's a good summer.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And during that summer, we actually went to see a filming of one of the first episodes of Family Matters with Reginald Bell Johnson.
Ah.
And the group of us stood up and started screaming to him, you know, what's in that Twinkie? And he just burst out laughing. I've tried to get in touch with him. He hasn't responded yet. You know, hopefully I will get him on this. I doubt he will remember the fact that a group of kids screamed at him, you know, what's in that Twinkie? And he and Thelma? I don't remember the actress's name, who was standing next to her. She started screaming, Die Hard, Die Hard, you know, pumping her fist at the same time. And so the two of them just cracked up. So that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. So Die Hard. Die Hard. Why? No, there's no why here.
Well, I mean, there's no why not.
Yes.
It's just, it's a perfect film.
I believe so.
As you're going to talk about in the next several months.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, this is the movie that I originally, when you and I discussed a year and a half ago, you know, trying to get me to start one of these, this is the one I wanted to do. And because of the aforementioned group, Die Hard, I just figured I couldn't do it. And I saw that someone had already signed up for the rest of the Die Hard. So I was like, all right, fine, forget it. I'll find something else. And that's why I started with The Great Escape. The truth is, I'm glad I started with The Great Escape because it gave me much more experience, you know, and to be able to do Die Hard on my third season as opposed to doing it on the first, you know, will help make it that much better for me and hopefully for all my listeners.
It's like you
mentioned all two of
Pete
you.
And Alex.
What?
I'm sure you have more than that. You mentioned Pete and Alex from Star Wars Minute at the start, who I think are on their 10th season because they're doing Solo at the moment. They've said before, I'm not sure if it was one of their Patreon episodes, that they kind of regret starting with Star Wars. With episode 4, because that's they consider that to be one of their weaker seasons because it was kind of finding their feet.
And right.
So it sounds like they almost wish they'd started with the prequels to kind of get them out of the way whilst they were learning how to do it, and then really delve into the meat of chapter 4, episode 4.
Right.
So I think not that The Great Escape is a throwaway film to practice on. The Great Escape is a film I'd maybe rank higher than Die Hard. A tall Great Escape.
I wouldn't rank it higher, but it would be close.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously I love The Great Escape, and now I love it even more because I know even more about it than I did before.
There we go.
I know more than most people should know. How's that?
You've certainly seen it more times than most people should.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So the movie begins with a shot of 20th Century Fox logo. So 20th Century Fox was a studio that was founded in 1935, and it was one of the big six major film studios, and it was formed by the merger between Fox and the Fox Film Corporation and 20th Century Pictures. And it was renamed in 1985, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation. They took out the hyphen for some reason, because they were acquired by the News Corporation, which eventually was succeeded by the 21st Century Fox in 2013. I mean, basically what happened was is that Daryl Zanuck left United Artists along with Joseph Schenck, and because they had a stock dispute, and they decided to get in touch with the president of Fox Film, whose name was Sidney Kent, and they decided to make this 20th Century Fox. Now, for me, 20th Century Fox, the thing that it's always been connected with is Star Wars. No question about that. You know, I think of the sound from 20th Century Fox. It doesn't matter what movie I'm watching. If I hear the fanfare, the first thing I think of is Star Wars. You know, because it, okay. To me, it always looked like the spotlights that they use. They look like lightsabers. Even though I know that they're not.
I always hear people associating, like, oh, when you hear like the MGM lion roar, what's the film you think of? That I've never connected any studio logo with any film. Like, I couldn't tell you. I'm terrible at what studios make any kind of films. So I do not connect 20th Century Fox with Star Wars, Die Hard, anything at all.
Well, I don't connect it to Die Hard. I connect it to, you know.
I don't start paying attention to a film until after the logos. I there's no connection to it in my head. It just doesn't work.
Okay, I mean, like, for Jurassic me,
Jurassic Park is my favorite film. I don't know which studio made it. I have no idea.
It's Universal, I think, isn't it?
Couldn't tell you. Probably. It's in the Universal Studios park, I think. But it doesn't make any kind of connection in my head as to what the studio is. I don't. That's not something I care about.
Okay. No, that's fair. That's completely fair. So they have also the fanfare, which was composed by Alfred Newman in 1933. You know, do you at least know what the 20th Century Fox fanfare is?
Yeah.
Exactly. There you go. No, now you got into Star Wars. But whatever.
Okay.
Right. So 20th Century Fox also has been the studio that has brought out some of the highest grossing movies ever. You know, you have Avatar came out from them, Titanic, all the Star Wars movies. You have Ice Age, Independence Day.
Not all the Star Wars movies. Some of the more recent ones aren't Fox, are they?
They're still considered part of Fox because Disney bought
Fox. Of course, because Disney bought Fox.
Disney bought Fox, right. Of course they did. And you have the X-Men movies. So yeah, I mean they've made a lot of money on movies over the years.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. So after the shot of that, we get the sound of an airplane overhead, and on the screen we get a shot of a Gordon Company Silver Pictures production.
Yeah, listening to the first episode, the first chapter, I did think we were back to Planes, Trains, Automobiles.
Yeah,
have the exact same plane landing.
I was thinking the same thing.
You can use the same intro music.
Maybe. I doubt it. I think I'm going to change it a little bit because I don't want it to be just, you know, a plane. Because the other one had the added bonus of a plane, a train, and an automobile. This one will only have a plane. So, I don't know.
I mean, there are cars in the film. I don't think there's any trains.
Not in this one.
Not in this one. Planes.
In the third one, in Die Hard with a Vengeance, we'll get some trains.
Yeah. So planes, and elevators, and automobiles.
Yes. Yeah, and Die Hard 2 has a lot of planes.
A lot of planes. Yeah.
And we do have some automobiles there too. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a little buggy that they drive around the airport.
That's as well. That's true also. And then we got a shot of the airplane landing, and then on the screen we get a John McTiernan film. So yeah,
John McTiernan, that's a storied career.
That is definitely a storied career. So what do you know about John McTiernan?
He directed Die Hard, he directed Predator, and he went to prison.
He directed a little more than that.
Last Action Hero, I think, was him as well.
That's right. And so was The Hunt for Red October.
He Rollerball. Also,
what?
Rollerball.
Rollerball. Well, Rollerball was his finer. Was Rollerball his fine?
No, basic.
Basic.
Made since Rollerball.
That's right. Basic wasn't
that. Oh, he did the Thomas Crown Affair as well, and of course Die Hard 3.
Yeah. I mean, he only has 12 movie credits on the IMDb. One of them is something that's in pre-production. So I don't know if from prison. I know he's been out of prison for almost a decade, but still, you know, he hasn't done very much. He's had some very interesting problems over the years. So he's had some very interesting problems over the years. But he happens to be a great director with some of the movies that you can see. You know, the way that he does them. So, I mean, we'll get to him later this week also, because there's a connection to him to one of the actors that we're going to see. But do you know why he went to prison? Do you know what the whole story was?
I have known in the past, but I can't remember right now.
He hired a private investigator to illegally wiretap the phone calls of the co-producer of the movie Rollerball.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, I remember the story now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this what a reason to go to prison.
And then he eventually also... Yeah, I mean, and it was in court for over a decade, his whole case. It made it all the way up to the Supreme Court, who refused to even listen to his case. You know, they said, we're not even going to waste our time with your case.
So when did he actually get incarcerated? Because Rollerball came out in 2002.
He was in prison from April 2013 to February 2014.
Okay, right.
So it was a little less than a year.
I thought it was a lot earlier than that.
Yeah.
I feel like I've always known the director of Die Hard went to prison, even like before he went to prison, it seems.
Right.
But fair enough.
Right. And the funniest thing is that during the court cases, when they found out that he had tapped someone else's also. Tapped someone else's. And whose did he tap? He tapped his ex-wife's phone while they were in the middle of their divorce negotiations.
Yeah, that was the second perfectly one. Reasonable thing to do.
Of course.
Nothing untoward there.
Who was a film producer? His wife, Donna Dubrow. And certain things, you know, he made a lot of money making movies, but you can't say he's the brightest person around. These type of things. What can I tell you? And what's funny is that when he was in prison, he actually got support from Samuel L. Jackson, Alec Baldwin, and Brad Bird. They all, you know, supported him, I think, on Facebook or whatever. A free John McTiernan.
What's the Brad Bird connection?
I guess no idea. Absolutely
where did
that no idea.
Cross?
Absolutely no idea. So he was in prison for 328 days and then needed to serve the rest of his one-year sentence in under house arrest in his home. He had this huge ranch in Wyoming, which he needed to sell once he filed for bankruptcy not long afterwards. So yeah, he not someone you really want to, or not someone that anyone wants to hire since 2003. I mean, think about it. He's a director who made some amazing movies that nobody wants to even go near for 20 years.
It seems like Brad Bird just a fan of Die Hard.
Okay.
In a quick Google.
So am I. I wouldn't necessarily put support his way, especially since we know that many people in Hollywood do some crazy and stupid things. So just because
I mean, they're good. Not just in Hollywood, all over the world.
No, that's true. But the ones in Hollywood are we're able to see more.
Certainly more public, yeah.
Yeah. A little more public, what they do. So then we get a shot of someone's arm on a armrest on the plane. We see that it's a man who has a wedding ring on his fourth finger on his arm. And he's sitting next to this businessman who is reading a magazine. I unfortunately couldn't tell what magazine he's reading, so I couldn't tell you. But the businessman is wearing a vest, has a loosened tie. You know, he has a pen in his shirt pocket. You know, the typical businessman type of thing.
Yeah.
And then right after that, we get the Bruce Willis credit. So Bruce Willis, the star of this movie, was born
Okay.
on the 19th of March, 1955. So as of recording, he is 67 years old. He has 118 movie credits, which is astounding for a someone who was a top-tier actor. Most of his credits over the last few years have been, you know, just small little roles in a lot of little action films that a friend of the show, Darren, loves to watch. I don't, you know. And he has 14 TV credits, including his 66-episode stint on Moonlighting from 1985 to 1989, which is what he was most famous for when this movie was being made.
Wasn't he was making them both at the same time,
yes.
Wasn't he? Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was going to talk about this tomorrow, but today seems it apt, where I've always considered Bruce Willis to be like an older guy, but just doing research for this, in Die Hard, he is 1 year younger than I am now. And this did not please me when I found out this information. I've always considered, John McClane, he's an older guy, but Bruce Willis is 33 in this film. I am 34. I'm not happy about this. That is all.
Because you haven't been able to achieve everything that he's achieved at this age?
No, it's just I just always considered him to be older than I am. And unfortunately, where he stopped aging in this film, I continued to do so.
Well, as we've discussed, I think we discussed this last year, but you know, last season. But you know, there's no alternative.
Yes, it's to be immortalized in film and never and stop aging. That's
well, we're being immortalized on podcasts. That's where okay. We'll come from. You know, our voices will not age. How's that?
Fine. I'll have to do. I suppose
it's the best there is, Jay. What can I tell you?
I'm not here looking for a solution to this. It just. I'm just telling you my researching process.
Get cracking on finding the way to live forever. There you go. And then you'll be able to say that I can always be just 1 year older than John McClane. And that's it.
Yes.
We'll be good. So you'll be looking forward to the fact that if and when I do Die Hard 2, so you'll be able to say that you are 1 year younger than John McClane.
Yes.
If we do it quick enough. Yeah.
Yeah, if we do it quick enough. Yeah.
And or you might just have the same gripe again, you know. We'll have to wait and see. So then we get to see this businessman. So the businessman is played by an actor named Robert Lesser, who was born in 1942. On the 22nd of October, he will be 80 years old later this year. He has 29 movie credits, 27 TV credits, and he's. What's really interesting is when I was going through his credits, so there's a movie called An American Rhapsody where he is given his credit is the producers and director wish to thank, which I found to be really strange. You know, why would someone why you would have something like that?
He's an actor in there as well.
Yes.
Yes,
that is true. And then when I did a little bit of research on it, I found that the producers and directors thanked 43 people this way. So it wasn't as special as I thought it was.
Well,
I was like, wow, what did he do to make, you know, the director and producers wish to thank him personally? And apparently
he showed up. But he's in one of my co-host Mark's favorite films, Ernest Saves Christmas.
There you go.
A film I've never seen.
Well, he probably doesn't give Ernest as good advice as he will give our good friend shortly.
Is it good advice or is it terrible advice?
I don't know.
we'll get to that tomorrow, but for today
we'll call it Chekhov's advice. How's that?
He is the least observant passenger aboard this plane, I would say, because he's waited until they land to notice that Bruce Willis, John McClane, isn't a fan of flying.
No, that's because during the landing he sees that he's gripping the armrest.
Yes, I get that. But in my experience, people who are not fans of flying are not fans of flying throughout the entire flight, not just right at the end. So we only see him grip the plane rest, but there would have been similar tension from Bruce during takeoff, any during turbulence at all. My only theory is that this guy, businessman as he's credited, sat down and fell asleep immediately. which I've done before. I love flying. I've had no problems with it at all. So occasionally I will sit down and wake up mid-flight and just miss the entire takeoff.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I've had that happen. I was even once on a flight where I slept almost the entire flight and then got really upset because the stewardess woke me up to see if I wanted my meal. And yeah. I was lying down on the seats at the time, you know.
See, I'd never want to miss. I hate sleeping on a plane, because that's prime film watching time.
That's true.
Like you're trapped in a cinema with wings, as far as I'm concerned.
Trapped? I don't know if trapped is the right word.
But you can't get out. but why would you want to? So when I've sat down and fallen asleep, I've missed like a film and a half I could have watched.
Oh well. What can I don't fly that often, so you know I find time to watch movies. You know, I don't need to be trapped in a plane for that.
Maybe I do.
Apparently. It's the only time that you have when you have nothing else to do.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you know, there you go. Then we get a zoom out on both the passengers, and he actually takes a look and sees that John McClane is quite tense. So then he turns to him and says, "You don't like flying, do you?" And then McClane's response is, "What gives you that?" And then it gets cut off. So we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out what he's talking about there. But who knows? So, Jay, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular minute?
No, it is a pretty light minute on content. Yet we're still, the episode is already over half an hour long. Somehow. So no, I have nothing else to add.
It's not as light as the first episode of Plane Strange Automobile as was.
This is true. It's very true.
There we got to see a building and a watch.
Yep.
Here at least we get to see people talking, even though they each only have one line. Who knows?
This is true. Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm going to be doing every day, and it won't be as much discrepancies as I had for Plane Strange Automobiles, but I'm going to go through the script.
Wait, there's no 6-hour version of Die Hard?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
No.
Good.
Yeah. So basically the script does have some discrepancies here and there, and just going to mention a few of them. So first of all, the script begins not on the airplane. It begins on a shot of the freeway, right? It says, the 405 freeway, Los Angeles, early evening, Christmas tinsel on the light poles. We are looking east past Inglewood into the orange grid of LA at night when suddenly we tilt up to catch the huge belly of a landing 747. The noise is deafening. And then it shows the interior of the plane with the passengers and says, the usual moment just after landing when you let out the sigh of relief that you've made it in one piece. As the plane taxis to its gate, they stir, gather personal belongings. Then there's a shot on John McClane, mid-30s, good-looking, athletic, and tired from his trip. He sits by the window. His relief on landing is subtle, but we notice. Suddenly he hears, and then you have it's a salesman's voice. You don't like flying, do you? McClane turns, looks at the Babbitt clone next to him. Caught, he tenses, holds his armrests in exaggerated fear. No, no, where'd you get that? And then that gets cut off also. So not that many differences here. It's pretty much the same thing. I like the way that they describe John McClane. You know, mid-30s, good-looking, younger than Jay. and I like the fact that here they refer to him as a salesman, and they decided to change it to a businessman. I don't really know why they would make a change to that. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. Now,
there was the term Babbitt clone that threw me. What
was that? Ooh, there you go. How did you know that that's what I was going to talk about next?
I didn't. That's why I jumped in. But what is
okay,
what the word Babbitt, what are you talking about?
Okay, so Babbitt was a satirical novel written by Sinclair Lewis in 1922. And it was all about American culture and society that critiques the way that the middle class life and social pressure towards conformity works.
Okay.
And They basically, in the English language, the word Babbitt means a person, and especially a business or professional man, who conforms unthinkingly to prevailing middle class standards. So basically, they're saying this guy is dressed typically like a businessman. Yeah. That's what they're trying to say.
A corporate stooge. Okay.
Yes, completely. Now, when I first heard this, I thought he said Bobbitt. Sorry, when I read it, I thought we were talking about a Bobbitt clone. Do you know who Bobbitt was?
I do not.
John Bobbitt? Never heard of him?
Nope.
I'm sure you have, but you just didn't know. It's John and Lorena Bobbitt were a couple that were married in 1989. And in 1993, their relationship received press coverage all around the world when they found out that she actually cut his penis off with a knife while he was sleeping.
Okay.
You've really never heard of him?
Nope.
Wow. Okay. Apparently, he got his penis surgically reattached, and she claimed that he was raping her and abusing her for years, and earlier that evening, she had apparently assaulted him and decided that she's going to get her revenge. She went into the kitchen, took out a butcher knife, and the rest is part of history.
Yeah, okay.
They obviously got divorced.
You'd think, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, wow.
I mean, I'm not going to go into too much detail. I found more detail on this, but, you know, this is not the guy sitting next to...
As a Bobbitt clone, is it like he's a little loose in the crotch kind of thing?
Well, that's why I wasn't sure. That's why it didn't make sense. So that's why I looked up to find out what a Bobbitt was.
In the legs of his trousers.
Who knows? Could be any of those things. So another thing that I'm going to be doing as often as I can is this book, this movie was we didn't mention this before. This movie is based on a book called Nothing Lasts Forever that was written by Roderick Thorpe in 1978. And it was a sequel to another book that he had written a decade earlier called The Detective, which was made into a movie starring Frank Sinatra. So one of the things that the controversies of making this movie was, you know, who would play the character of John McClane? And part of Sinatra's contract for the detective was if they ever were to make a sequel to that movie and the character's name in the book and in the detective is Joe Leland, it's not John McClane. So they first had to offer it to Sinatra. Which, you know, I cannot imagine Sinatra playing this character, especially since he was 73 at the time.
But I think they could have had a nice cameo, like if he'd been the guy next to Bruce on the plane, that could have been fun.
Like, I don't know if Sinatra would have agreed to do that.
I don't think he would have. I'm just saying it would have been nice if he had, like, as a show of good faith, to, like, pass the torch on to this new guy. But yeah, I don't see it happen.
Yeah. I don't think so. Do you know any of the other actors that were supposed to be cast?
Oh, there's dozens. It's like everyone who was working at that time.
Yeah. Bruce Willis was like the 100th choice or something like
that. Yeah. So, any actor working in 88 was a higher choice than him.
and for some reason, you know, I can't see any of them being able to do this character the same way that he did.
No, it would have been a very different film for all of them.
Yeah. Did you know any of the people that were supposed to be?
I think I heard about Reynolds, Schwarzenegger. You mentioned Stallone. Like I said, just all of the big guys who were working then.
I mean, I remember that Richard Gere was the main person they wanted.
Yeah. Which I feel like of the I feel like he would have been the closest of the other non-McClanes. I feel like Richard Gere, because he can do comedic. He maybe is a little too handsome because Richard Gere just has one of those faces that are like, oh, he's not a real person. That's not how people look. That's you put the slider too far in the handsome direction. Right. Just scale it back a little bit. So he would, but then that kind of would have fit into the John McClane because, you know, later this week, he just walks past the lady and she stops to check him out.
Right.
So
we'll talk more about that later this week.
There's
more to that. But so the list of people that I saw that they tried getting to play this role that all declined, and I wonder how many of them are kicking themselves 34 years later still that they didn't do it. You have Richard Gere, Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, Schwarzenegger, Clint Eastwood, Robert De Niro, Charles Bronson, Don Johnson, Richard Dean Anderson, you know, MacGyver, Burt Reynolds, and Michael Madsen.
Michael Madsen would be a terrible choice. He's fine in some films. He would have been awful here. I feel like, Richard Gere would work. There was another one that you said that immediately left my head that I thought also would have been a good one.
Richard Dean Anderson?
No.
Charles Bronson? De Niro?
No.
Mel Gibson?
I think Gibson would have worked. I'm glad it wasn't him. Just because of what allegations and everything that's come out since. I like to be able to enjoy Die Hard. I don't enjoy some early Mel Gibson films these days.
No, but Mel Gibson also a year before made a Lethal Weapon. So
yeah, that's why it'd been too similar.
It would have been, it would have been too crazy to have him as the actor. You know?
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
All right. So as I started saying, the novel that this is based on. So it starts off, and it doesn't start off in L.A. It actually starts off in St. Louis, where we have the main character driving in a taxi on his way to the airport, and they seem to have a little bit of a problem because the taxi gets into a little fender bender with some guy in a station wagon who starts screaming at them, and you know, Joe Leland complains about the fact that he has 20 minutes to catch his flight. You know, which those were the days when you can actually try to get to an airport 20 minutes beforehand and hope to get on the plane. You know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see later this week. Things that don't happen in airports anymore.
Yes, there are many of those that we will get to. That's for sure. And then he finally gets on the plane, and then a lot happens on the plane. But I'm going to actually wait until a little later this week to tell you what happened on the plane, even though he's still on the plane. So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guest will tell us their top five movies that are based on the Die Hard genre. So Jay, what have you got for us?
Okay, so I wanted to keep it. I feel like the Die Hard genre, the villains of it have to be people, terrorists, criminals of some kind. So you can't have something like Daylight is a film I really adore, where it's like one man against everything, but the everything is the elements.
Well, elements, so, you know, you can do that too.
I've tried to keep it as there are people who are the problem with this, and it's one guy in a bad situation trying to overcome it. And I've also tried to not have any of the Die Hard sequels on my list of Die Hard films, so otherwise Die with a Vengeance would be up there. So number five is Die Hard on Air Force One, which is the film Air Force One.
Okay. With
Harrison Ford. The great thing about all of these films is the supporting cast. So the likes of like William H. Macy is a great like background player.
Yeah, I loved him in that one.
Die Hard one. Yeah, Air Force One. Number four, Speed, is maybe the classic Die Hard on a Bus. One of the... I reckon that's going to be a lot higher on people's lists throughout the course of this podcast. But
is something that apparently a friend of the show, Roger, is going to be doing, you know, a minute-by-minute podcast of Speed.
I look forward to being on that show, hopefully, if you'll have me. I want some Alan Ruck minutes. I love Alan Ruck. number three is a film I watched very recently over on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is Cliffhanger, Die Hard on a Mountain, with Stallone, John Lithgow, like a believable fist fight between Sylvester Stallone and John Lithgow. Something that should not work, but does, because it's on an upturned helicopter. Number two is Die Hard at Alcatraz, is The Rock, it's two guys, and it's that rare instance of where the guys head into the situation to help out rather than being there already to try and fix it. But the combo of Connery and Cage is a thing of beauty.
Yes.
I think. And then number one, as I'm sure you could probably have guessed, Die Hard on a plane taken over by criminals is Con Air.
Ooh.
It could be nothing else. Yes. You know, you're doing Die Hard minute by minute. Very soon after this podcast comes out, I will be releasing Con Air chapter by chapter. So
there you go. So in another week or so, people will be able to, you know,
yeah, a to couple listen. Of weeks, I think. Yeah. Well, soon. Keep an ear out, everyone.
All right, sounds good. Great. So you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes. Well, I'll plug something different every day. Because I have many things to plug. So I will do the thing we just talked about, Con Air the podcast. Just search for Con Air the podcast anywhere podcasts can be found. I'm pretty sure all of our social media will be at Con Air Pod, if I can get all those handles, which I have some of them. So Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, etc. It's very similar to this show, but Con Air, and instead of minute by minute, instead of daily minute by minute, it's weekly, chapter by chapter. So that's the schedule that works best for me and my co-host Mark. Where we've taken the classic cage action thriller Con Air with thousands of supporting character actors as various convicts and guards and everything, and we broke it up into 40 DVD chapters. There's actually technically 18 DVD chapters on the DVD, but how that broke down was really unbalanced. There's a huge action set piece in the center of the film, which is one chapter. And that, which is like 15 minutes of that would have taken like and 3-4 hours.
Is too long for you guys to talk about.
It's what far too long. You could can't imagine talking about one film for a podcast, honestly. Well, an entire franchise like I used to do. But yeah, so Con Air the podcast is where Mark and I are having a wonderful time talking about Con Air, the best Die Hard on a podcast, on a film.
Die Hard on a podcast. There you go.
I've said it before, that if there isn't a podcast called Die Hard on a podcast going through all of the Die Hard like adjacent films, then someone somewhere is missing a trick.
Well, there you go. Now you know what to do after Con Air.
I have too many. No, stop it.
You have Saving Private Ryan, right?
I'm not the right person to do Die Hard on a podcast. I know some other people who would be much better than I am, and they should be doing that. DJ Valentine.
You have to do Saving Private Ryan first, right?
Yes, of course. One death at a time. Yeah.
All right. And finding me is very simple. You just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute, and you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to my website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.